tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's August 8, 2024, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. We're going to start today's news off with a story from Tesla. Tesla is working through its giant Cybertruck backlog pretty fast. That's according to Fred Lambert, who put this article up early this morning. Tesla's working through its giant backlog of over 1 million Cybertruck reservations pretty fast based on who it's inviting to configure a truck. Tesla is currently only selling a, quote, Foundation Series version of the truck, which bundles all options together for $20,000 on top of the $80,000 Cybertruck dual motors price. How many people are buying $100,000 Cybertrucks? The answer is not that many. With the Foundation Series, Tesla's only selling the dual and tri-motor variants of the Cybertruck, but a reservation tally showed that the vast majority of buyers wanted these two versions. Despite that, and despite Tesla having over a million reservations sitting for almost 3 years and having sold only an estimated 15 to 20,000 Cybertrucks, the company is already having trouble finding new buyers for its Foundation Series. Electrek received several reports from Cybertruck reservation holders who placed reservations within the last 12 months who are getting contacted by Tesla to convert their reservations into orders. In one case, a Texas resident who reached out to Electrek claims to have placed a reservation just last month and received an invitation to configure their truck just 2 weeks later. Once those Cybertrucks do find buyers, though, they're going to have an easier time charging. That's because ChargePoint has introduced a new Omniport connector that combines Tesla and other EV plugs into a single port. ChargePoint unveiled its new Omniport EV plug technology earlier today, and it looks like a viable solution for both Tesla and non-Tesla drivers alike. The system combines J1772 and NACS, that's the North American Charging Standard, or Tesla Charging Standard, into one while maintaining the capabilities for CCS1 DC fast charging where available. As a result, ChargePoint's Omniport eliminates the need for adapters as well as dedicated charging spaces based on EV plug types. ChargePoint CEO Rick Wilmer says, "Across hardware and software, ChargePoint is bringing to market innovative solutions that ensure all drivers who need to charge are able to do so. With Omniport, ChargePoint has solved the challenges associated with a multiple connector environment, ensuring that Tesla and non-Tesla drivers can continue to expect a world-class driver experience." ChargePoint states that its new technology debuts as the first commercially available solution for universal EV charging, helping slay the plug confusion that currently slows down the process. EV drivers on ChargePoint's network will simply need to enter their vehicle's make and model into the ChargePoint app and then initiate their charging session. From there, the Omniport equipped station will automatically deploy the correct connector type and start juicing up the vehicle. Now, that is a really critical thing that Scooter is covering there and that ChargePoint is addressing. This idea that EVs, different EVs, have different charging points. That's not something that is intuitive because drivers, of course, over the last 100 years have always just used regular diesel, whatever it is. The thing goes in the thing and it works. With EVs being a little more complicated, a solution like this where it's one stop, you pull in with your EV, put in the make and model and it pops out. That's great stuff, but it's still a very real challenge that manufacturers are overcoming, especially manufacturers who are switching from CCS to that NACS standard. And one of the companies that's doing that is Kia. Kia is absolutely killing it with their EV9, their EV6. Now they're coming up with new EV3 and EV4 downmarket vehicles. And for the first time, the EV3 was officially spotted in the US ahead of its upcoming debut. Peter Johnson writes, "After opening pre-orders in Korea starting at just $30,700, Kia's EV3 is already a social media sensation. Will the game-changing EV3 have the same effect in the U.S.? Ahead of its official market debut, the EV3 was spotted testing on U.S. roads, heavily camouflaged, but there it is. You can see from the headlights, you can see from the mirrors, you can see from the shapes of the body cladding. This is basically what we're going to get. But I think what we're going to do today is a little different. Instead of talking about Kia, we're going to talk to Kia. And with that, today's guest for the show is James Bell. Is your official title head of communications for Kia, director of communications?
I'm the esoteric way of saying it. I am the protector and the promoter. How's that?
I like that you are the protector of the Kia brand and the Kia name. I love that. And, you know,
It's true.
I will say this too, for those of you who've never met James Bell or never heard of him, he is a true, true car guy. He goes back in this industry, back into the 90s with GM, and has always been a good sport with these kind of things. So we're very happy to have him on the show. And, you
now,
know,
wait, hold on a minute there. You just made me sound like I'm 100,000 years old.
I started with GM in 97. So like, that's the 90s.
Well, I wasn't in the nursery in 97, but I was on the media side of the fence in 97. I joined GM in, 2011, something like that.
Oh, really? I thought it was much earlier than that. So let's see. I was an intern in early 97. So it had been like the winter semester of 97. They had us on. I still have the T-shirt actually folded up in a little box on the C5. Yeah, definitely dating myself.
Ooh.
On what became the Z06 Corvette and the coupe body. We were doing baffles in the oil pan as an engineering student, and the shirt was Pan Mission 1.
Oh.
So that's a deep cut. That's how I got to meet Joe Zimek, Dave McClellan, all those guys that are icons in the Corvette space.
Yeah.
And yeah, they liked me so much. They put me on the EVs right away because that was a punishment back then.
But they said, yes, this guy doesn't know performance cars.
This is not the guy. But, you know, again, it's we've come a long way. And Kia, obviously one of the brands, I think one of the brands that's leading the charge. Personally, I think Kia has the most credible lineup of EVs compared to Tesla in the industry. You've got the Kia EV9, the three-row SUV. That's exactly what people want in a family vehicle. You know, the EV6 made its debut drag racing against, you know, Lamborghinis and Porsches and all kinds of awesome stuff like that. So obviously that's an incredible machine. You've got the EV3 and the EV4 coming out. That seems to be something that people are excited about. Readers are excited about. From an insider's perspective, from someone who's inside of Kia, what are you most excited about?
What I love is the fact that this company is pedal down all the time when it comes to EVs. You know, I kind of see it as being a very advantageous moment in the history of the automotive industry that really is provided, you know, supercharged or a full tank of gas to really evolve this company. So if you go back, let's say 10, 12, 13 years, Kia was sort of seen as, for lack of a better term, the used car alternative. And what I mean by that is if you had a person whose car was dying, they check their wallet and they say, I really can't quite afford that new car I want. I really don't want a used car. Ah, I'll get a Kia. That was how the company for the first, you know, 20 some years of its existence in the United States went about its business, and very successfully. No more of that. We want to be seen as world class, brought in some of the best designers in the world, starting with Peter Schreier, who famously worked on some of the most beautiful Audis and Volkswagens and other German machines. Brought in Albert Biermann, who was the chief engineer for the BMW M division for 15 years before he joined Kia and now the larger Hyundai Motor Group. You know, a roster of international best in their class, you know, employees, designers, engineers, and so forth. So the company was changing. The Stinger came along and shocked the automotive system. And then came the big push into electrification. And that's where I say, you know, I feel so fortunate to be with this company that is absolutely pedal down. Albert Biermann, who I mentioned, was the chief engineer and architect of our EGMP platform. I remember being in Korea with him, gosh, probably 2018 or something. And him saying, James, get ready. This electric platform we're working on is going to be amazing. And my goodness, if that didn't come true, I don't know what else is. It just really, really, with all the awards, the Kia versions of EGMP platform and also Hyundai versions have collected, proves the metal, if you will, of that setup. So anyway, long way of saying the Kia brand was already in a major point of transformation. And then electrification became such a hot button or a hot circuit, if you will. And that's when we were ready with that because we had some really amazing strategies and products for electrification. So it's been a kind of a 1-2 punch.
Well, and I love that we're talking about the evolution of the brand, right? Because as Kia moves into that sort of mainstream audience and really mainstream to premium audience, you're also showing off vehicles and concepts like the PBV, which is a commercial EV, a class one, class two electric sort of van platform, if you haven't seen them. And this is a market that Ford and Chevy and even Ram have kind of left behind. Their electric vehicles are much larger with the Silverado, the e-Transit, things like that. Even the Ram ProMaster is much, much larger vehicle. There's a bunch of other neat features in this vehicle that I think are going to give you market advantages. But the commercial market is different from the consumer space. It's a little more dollars and cents. It's less motivated by styling. And Nissan found out some of the differences between consumer and commercial, probably the hard way. How
They
is
sure did.
Kia? Yeah, they did. How is Kia approaching the commercial space using kind of the brand values that got it to where it is today?
It's a great question. I would say, well, first off, I would say cautiously. While we know we have a really interesting product and using things we've learned from our EGMP platform and our electrification strategy, we also know that the Kia brand is sort of unexpected in the space. In fact, I attended an event back in Indianapolis back, I think it was in February of this year, the Work Truck Week. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah,
You should go
I
to
was
that.
there.
Well, I'll shut my mouth right now. That was
We keep
embarrassing.
missing each other at all these events, man. It's
Well,
like I
that might
just
be on
can't find
purpose,
you.
Joe. That might be on purpose. No, I'm just kidding.
It never occurred to me that that would be on purpose.
No, of course not. Well, at that event, I had a lot of fun because I was wearing a polo shirt that had the Kia brand on it. And I walked the floor several times just to see what was going on there, as a veteran of 1,000 car shows and SEMA and Pebble Beach and CES. Been around a lot of conventions, but I'd never seen that one. So I did stroll the floor, and I had people coming up to me and saying, you work for Kia? Yeah. Why are you here?
No, I appreciate that response, right? Because you're trying to be cautious. You're coming into this as a new automaker and a new brand. And commercial guys are weird. If they have a long-standing relationship with Ford, they probably drive a Ford at home. They probably come
Right.
from a family where their parents drove Fords. There are still Ford and Chevy families who've never experienced this kind of thing. But
Yes.
when they don't have a product that's the right size, in other words, they're not providing the right tool for the job, and you are, does that give you an opening or an advantage? Or do you think people are going to get hung up by the fact that it's a black oval instead of a blue oval?
I think that's an interesting question. I think we're going to be able to ride the coattails to some extent of the success we're having in personal transportation, electrified personal
Sure.
transportation. If you've been watching the Olympics lately, you'll see an ad for the EV9 running constantly that calls out us being the Triple Crown Award winner with Car and Driver, World Car of the Year, and North American SUV of the Year. That's somewhat unheard of to clean up all those awards. And that's just, we call it the Triple Crown because that's three. To answer your question about the purpose-built vehicle space, I feel like we're just going to kind of come cautiously relying on the fact that we know we have a product that is superior. That's one of the things I think that this company's learned so well is that a new ad campaign, a new commercial, a new slogan, those are all nice. But if the product isn't there, and this is what we proved with the Stinger and the Telluride and our electrification strategy, if the product isn't there, it will be flat. And so we're going to come slowly. We're going to learn. We're going to make sure that the idea and the product or the premise of our overall electrification strategy is present in how we go into that marketplace. And see how it goes. Because yes, you're right. From walking around that show floor back in Indy, there's a lot of good old boys there. And here comes this upstart from Korea. There will be some resistance, and we know that. But we also know that there will be smarter people in those audiences that are going to say, this is a business, an ROI decision more than a brand decision. And we feel like our business case is going to really kind of knock it out of the park.
Now, obviously, you can't talk too much about future products, but I'm hoping you can talk about some of the concepts that you showed, or you being Kia, showed at CES and ACT. There was a box truck version of the PBV commercial van. There was a pickup truck version. There was a steak bed version. How real are those concepts? Is that something that we're going to definitely see, or is that something that's going to, you know, for lack of a better word, depend on the level of success that the van body sees?
I wouldn't say it depends on the success of the van body. I think the beautiful thing about the platform that we're using, the EGMP platform, a modification of such, is that it's very, very flexible. We can easily, you know, lengthen the wheelbase if we want to do a small truck. We can shorten it if we want to do like little delivery trucks. We can do, it's really just the proverbial top hat on the platform. So, and this is a product that we're looking to have success in around the globe. So in certain markets, you know, certain parts of Southeast Asia, a little runabout truck might be the no-brainer. In other markets where the weather may not be as nice, you know, a small van or a mid-sized van might be the play. In some markets where the roads are very small and, you know, you want to really scoot into little urban areas, then one of the more micro-sized vans might be the right play. So we showed all those concepts at CES because we wanted to show that we're willing, we're ready. And I will say candidly, one of the things I love about working here is that, you know, we're well funded. we can do a lot of things. When the boss man says jump, this entire organization jumps.
There does seem to be an affinity among some people, some enthusiasts, for these little tiny vehicles, for these small commercial vehicles, the Ram ProMasters, you know, the Ford Transit Connects and things like that. Are these vehicles that Kia is building, are they going to be something that a contractor, a mom and pop, an individual can order? So like, you know, in my neighborhood of Chicago, we've got the Oak Park Cookie Dad. We've got Lyman Avenue Bread that do kind of door-to-door deliveries. Are those type of companies going to be able to buy these vans, or is this strictly like a Walmart, Amazon, last mile delivery type play?
That's a good question. Again, we're going at this a bit cautiously. So at this point, I believe it is focused on the larger slug of them to an organization to get that proof of concept out there, especially because in many cases with an electric vehicle, we're not going to have a 1,000-mile range on these things, you know, or a 500-mile range for that matter. It's going to be a shorter range for running a circuit and then coming back to the nest. So I think from a proof of concept side and some of the technology that we've shown at CES and we'll be showing other times of how the vehicle can integrate into a business model will lean us, towards a larger purchase first. But look, I can't say it any differently. If there's an opportunity to the little mom and pop kind of places, like you're saying, to the flower shop, the cookie shop, you know, off the record, I feel the Kia brand will fit very well in that space. I feel like, especially because these are pretty innovative looking machines, you know, when you see one roll down your street, you're going to stop and look and say, whoa, is there a car show in town? I think I just saw a concept car.
Why would you want that off the record? That's a great line.
Well, okay. Well, I guess I just said it out loud, so it's not off the record. But part of the story is, I just think it's going to be, there could be a value from a larger company having this very innovative fleet of vehicles, no doubt about it. But I think there could be even more value to Dave's cookie shop or Susan's flower shop to get, to show their brand value by embracing this new machine.
As we were setting up this call, I think I led into it talking about the EV3 and the EV4, and I've hijacked this into a commercial call, but I think the EV3 and the EV4 coming out are really super exciting. I don't think there's a direct parallel to the Model 3. I really don't know if there's another EV out there, maybe the Nissan Leaf, that is currently playing in that entry sort of commuter price point. Do you think that, similar to the PBV, that Kia is entering a market kind of all on its own and it's just going to dominate that entry-level EV space?
Well, you know, again, as a, like yourself, a long-term, fan and observer of this industry, the premise of having white space is golden, absolutely perfect. We saw that with EV9. We continue to have a very clean white space. Our own competitor Hyundai still does not have their version out yet. Really, the only, according to the media, and we can see tons of comparison tests, is against the Rivian. And now you're talking about a vehicle from a brand that is, to some eyes, still kind of in wonder. Will they succeed? I just saw their financials yesterday, I think it was. Not looking great. And I, listen, I wish them all the best in the world. Competition, especially in the EV space, makes our game better too. But again, in that three-row hotspot for the American market, it's really us and them, and our product is substantially more affordable, in many ways more of what somebody's looking to use as a kind of an urban runabout kind of thing, as opposed to a real off-road, go climb a mountain machine. Now going at EV3 especially, I think we have another opportunity for white space. And you talk about this competitive set. The one that I think we were probably most concerned about was the Volvo EX30. Because that is kind of the refinement, the kind of step up brand perception, and just put them side by side, footprint wise, very similar size and very similar purposes. But Volvo is, well, I'm good friends with some of the people over there, so I won't say what I would have normally said, but they're struggling with that, shall we say. And so the opportunity for EV3 continues to be clear. Now you talk about the next level of consumer adoption. It's going to be with those that are not looking to buy an EV as a statement piece for their home, an expensive Mercedes EQS or something like that. Lovely machine, out of budget for a vast majority of people, and not the greatest commuter type machine either, let's be fair. That's when we look at vehicles like EV3 as really having a huge opportunity. Affordable, we hope to come in at about $35,000 at a starting price. Great range, great charging speeds, great design, kind of a shrunken down EV9 look, which we know is popular. So yeah, huge opportunity there for the people who most, and I can't believe I'm saying this to somebody doing the work that you do, but once you go EV, you realize, holy crap, what was I doing with a gasoline-powered car? Especially if your primary use case is a commute type thing. It's absolutely silly to use gasoline for that. And that's where EV3 and probably to a similar extent, EV4 will come in very, very nicely.
This has all been great stuff, James. I know we're getting to the end of our time commitment here. I want to give you an opportunity for people who are interested in these cars, for people who want to see the latest and greatest from Kia. How do they follow along with what you're doing, and what's the best way for them to get all the hot new information other than reading Electrek? Of course, we know that's the best way, but if they don't want to do that, where do they go?
Well, they need to get smacked in the head if they're not at Electrek. Let's just say that out loud, because you guys do great work. It's pretty simple. Kia.com. In fact, we have a whole section there that is dedicated to electrification, answering questions about that, answering questions about charging. If I could just make a quick mention of our partnership with the Iona Group, now up to 8 OEMs that are all part of this huge investment in getting public charging out there at all high speed too, which not all the vehicles that are currently in the partnership can take advantage of high speed. So let's just say that out loud.
To your point about that, when Volvo, about 2 years ago, they first rolled out this campaign that with their charge point from Seattle, Pacific Northwest to Denver, that you were going to be able to go with charge point network at Starbucks and hit these high speed charging locations. And they put in the press release, you'll be able to charge up in 20 minutes while you're having your cup of coffee. And if you do that math, none of the vehicles that Volvo had at the time could support that 300 kilowatt charging. So it was just complete nonsense. It's different now. They've got the EX90 rolling out. The EX30, to your point, is going to be a different vehicle once they overcome their Chinese tariff troubles. But that was such a bananas press release. I still have a copy of it somewhere that's like all redlined. Yeah.
And it's stuff like that that's fed maybe some of the sourpuss coverage of the EV space. Like, well, we told you so. Well, you remember Volvo said this thing.
I don't buy that. Those are the same guys that complained when Porsche went from air-cooled to water-cooled. Those are the same guys that complained when Corvette went mid-engine. Those are going to be, they complained when Corvette went away from the leaf spring rear suspension. They're going to complain. Yeah, you know, if you tried to build an independent suspension pickup truck, if you said, look, pickup trucks right now in North America are primarily used for moving people and occasionally stuff from Home Depot, we can build a consumer-focused pickup that's luxury-oriented, that has proper suspension and rides nice, and we can do that in a way that's going to still meet the needs of most of those light-duty users and have a separate line of pickups. If you did that, you're going to have those same guys come out and say, well, it's not a real truck because it doesn't have a live axle. So, like, I wouldn't lose too much sleep over them. I hope Kia is not. I think
No.
that's all I've got for you, James. Anything else you want to cover before we sign off?
Super quick. One of the greatest, what's word, incentives, I think, that will happen is when these new charging stations from Iona come out. I've had a chance to see some of the early mock-ups and the way they're going to look. And what I mean by that is when somebody drives by one in their gasoline-powered beast and they see one of these stations, they're going to look at each other in the car and say, I'd like to go there. That's an appealing looking place to go. They don't have gasoline. I have no need to go there. Maybe we should consider EV. Mark my words. The when this network comes out, and I'm so glad that Kia is deep participant in this, it will definitely supercharge, no pun intended, the idea of people getting into EVs that are not Teslas. There we are.
Always a pleasure to have James on the show. James has been a good friend of mine now for a couple of years. We've gotten together at the Electrify Expo. We've gotten together at Industry Day. We've talked before on the Heavy Equipment Podcast, one of my other shows. Great guest, great guy, and we're very grateful that he was here. Of course, we always love having guests on the show, even though it's kind of a new thing. If there's a guest, somebody within the EV industry in the automotive space that you want us to talk to, be sure to let us know in the comments and we'll do our best to get them on the show. I'm going to try to wrap up today with a little bit of Chinese invasion. Windrose is going to build its electric semi trucks in the United States. Now, fair enough. Anybody who looks at this, the first thing they're going to see is that central driving position. They're going to look at this sloping nose and they're going to say, this is a Tesla clone. I actually called it a Tesla clone the first time I wrote about it. That seemed to have negative connotations. So at this point, it's just an electric semi. If this is the first time you're seeing it, let it go. That said, the company is calling this a direct challenge to the Tesla Semi. The heavy truck manufacturer Windrose announced plans to build a new assembly plant in the US, presumably in a bid to sidestep heavy tariffs on electric vehicles made in China. But the company's CEO said that's not actually the case. Quote, the US market is friendly towards Chinese heavy trucks based on the fact that the tariffs on imported trucks are much lower than those on cars, says Windrose chief executive Han Wen. Many of our clients are US firms, for example, Nike, and we can serve them in their home market. Company's trucks feature a 729 kilowatt hour battery that can add 400 kilometers of range, about 248 miles, in just over 30 minutes using BorgWarner's newest megawatt charging cables. That's possible due to a pair of liquid-cooled charging terminals that can support dual-gun, single-vehicle, high-power, super-fast charging with a single-gun maximum output of 600 amps. Windrose says U.S. companies account for, quote, the majority of its 6,500 standing orders, and those orders would ideally be filled by the company's planned U.S. assembly plant in Georgia. The company also plans to expand its manufacturing operations in Europe, with another factory there planned in an as-yet unnamed EU nation set to sidestep their tariffs on Chinese trucks. That's all we've got for today, August 8th. If you like what you heard, be sure to like and subscribe. And if not, it doesn't matter. I'll still be doing another one of these Monday. Hopefully you'll listen to that one and hate it too.